What's going on, Clipper Nation? It's me, William the Opinion Updike, here with Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On NBA Network. No positive Chuck today, but I'll try to keep things light and bright. Got a heck of a show lined up for you today. It's Twitter Tuesday, in case you didn't know. We go live on Twitter. That's at Locked On Clips every single Tuesday around 1:30. I think it might have been 1:35 p.m. today, Pacific. But hey, you know, I'm doing my best. Got a heck of a show lined up for you today. We're going to kick things off with a little bit more draft talk for our second round guys. We're picking pretty late, so some of these guys, I don't know if they're going to be actually available, but we're going to break those down for you. And then we're going to be taking questions live from viewers on the stream. If you're ever unable to tune in the stream, but you want to ask a question, go ahead and send that through on Twitter to at Locked On Clips, at Charles Mockler, at Will Updike, and we will get back to you. And then we're going to wrap things up with a little bit of a segment that I'm calling PBEV Gone and Who Says No. So we got some free agents coming up. I'm going to toss them out to Twitter and see who says no. I think there's going to be a lot of no's on this one. Anyways, jumping into the draft, we're looking at those 48th and 56th picks. Some would say the most coveted picks in a draft. No one has said that, not once. But I'm already hearing people on the Twitter stream saying Pat Bev is gone. Couple of big mocks have us taking some guys, one being Jontay Porter, who is the brother of the oft-injured Michael Porter Jr., and I don't know. I don't love this fit. He's a 6'10", power forward slash center. If you follow this team or its roster, we've got a lot of similar guys with a very similar build. He's from Nathan Hale High School. Shout out Nathan Hale. He's MPJ's brother. He has torn his ACL and his MCL in a scrimmage in October, and then he re-tore that ACL during rehab. So he was unable to play all last year. He was another Mizzou guy. And, you know, immediately what this makes me think is that he might be made of glass, but I think that this could be more indicative, actually, of Mizzou's I think this could actually be more indicative of Mizzou's training staff. I don't want to throw any slander. Obviously, I'm not intimately involved in the day-to-day details of that, but I do think that college training facilities are a lot different than the type of care you would get, obviously, from the NBA. You're dealing with people who, you know, might still be grad students. You're dealing with people who are, you know, probably making, like, what a public school teacher makes. And, I mean, not that they're not great at their jobs or there aren't great people there, but I do think, as a student athlete, you got to be a little bit more worried about the care that's being taken for you, especially if you're a guy who isn't a number one prospect, who's not, you know, who's a one-and-done guy, but, like, maybe doesn't have the support staff or a great agent. I think that makes it really difficult for you to get that kind of care. And, like, an injury like that, like, doing both the ACL and the MCL in one go, that sounds so rough. Matt Chonger is asking if he has soft ligaments. Maybe. I do think, though, one thing I will say is that if you're going to tear your ACL twice, I guess it's better to do it when you're 18 than when you're, you know, 20-something, but it doesn't bode well. So now that I've really just dumped all over this prospect, let's get into a couple positives for Jontay Porter. When he was able to play, he was a solid catch. He was a solid catch and release shooter. It's not the fastest shot that I've ever seen, and the release point is good. It's a little bit hard to gauge for me against college competition, just because if you're 6'10", you're one of the bigger dudes out there on the court, unless you're Bol Bol or something. So, yeah. Oh, someone's saying that they might have also had a sister who blew out her ACL and MCL. I'll have to double check on that, but yeah, I mean, they just might not have the build to put on a lot of weight and make a lot of quick lateral movements, which is not great for a prospect. So the Ringer also did an article on him, and 2 weeks before he hopes to hear his name called in the NBA draft, he's not yet been cleared to pivot off of his right knee, which I'm assuming is the one that he tore the ACL in there twice. So I don't know how that could possibly work out. I don't know if this guy's going to end up getting drafted, to be perfectly honest with you. Last year, I was in the camp that I wasn't even sure that Michael Porter Jr. was ready to be drafted. It's kind of a bummer that you can't declare for the draft and then see where you would go and then pull out, as you can in baseball and some other sports. Because I think that had Michael Porter Jr. gotten the chance to rehab to a full extent and get out there and play, you know, maybe he could have risen his stock a little bit, or I guess it could have also imploded completely. So if he can rehab fully, like, he does become somewhat of an intriguing piece, mainly just due to the floor spacing. And our medical staff has seemed really good. You know, obviously they've dealt with a ton of injuries. I don't know what the turnover has been like since the Blake Griffin stuff to now. I actually would be more interested in knowing more about that. So if you guys have any info about, like, who's been on staff since Blake and the Lob City era and who is, like, transitioning this new thing, it seems like they've done really well. Injury history, knock on whatever is close to you, has been a lot better for the Clippers recently. But, you know, obviously a terrible, terrible pass. I guess the big thing for me for Jonte is, can we afford to keep a guy on the roster that we can't play? Yeah, someone's pointing out that we have been able to keep Gallo healthy, so I agree. Like, I do think that the training staff has, I don't know if it's improved or if they're just it's improved. You know what? I recant my previous statement. It's definitely improved. People think that maybe he could be a decent piece next to, like, a training kind of center. Like, if we were to pick up a Vucevic or a Lopez, he could rehab with no pressure. I don't see how there could be no pressure on Jonte Porter really in any situation. We just have too many guys. We have a logjam of guys that are this kind of 6'10 power forward center build. And I just think that developmentally, guys like Angel Delgado, guys like Jonathan Motley are a lot further ahead, especially for an NBA game. So I don't know. If this is what's left, oh man, I hate to say that. If this is what's left for us in the second round, you know, maybe it'd be intriguing to try and take a try, especially if we're confident that if we get him into comfortable spots, he can kind of camp out in the corner, be a little bit of a magnet for the defense and let that second unit pick and roll Trez and Lou Will kind of function to its fullest. So that's all I really got for Jonte Porter. I don't know, man. It seems really troublesome. It's not a pick that I would ever really feel strongly about. Somebody's asking if Zubats is a restricted or unrestricted free agent, and does he have a team option? I believe that he's an unrestricted free agent, though he is coming off of a rookie deal, so he might still be restricted. I don't always know how those work. Nick Gill could be interesting if the front office has to cut loose Ty Wall or Sin. Nick Gill is the he's related to Shea. I do think that it's like an interesting idea. Chonger believes that Zubats is restricted. That would make sense. He's coming off of a rookie deal, so I believe that we would get those bird rights in that scenario. I'm not sure how it works, just depending on the extension that you're given. So another prospect that we're looking at in this late second round is Jalen McDaniels, and he's mocked at possibly falling to us. Another power forward, also 6'10". So he averaged 16-8 in college. He had splits of 46, 32, 72 in his senior year at SDSU. That's fine. It's not great. I think I've said it here before on the pod, but, like, anybody who is a below 80% free throw shooter in college, I'm just kind of wary that they're ever going to be able to develop a comfortable or consistent shot at the NBA level. He had a 94 defensive rating his senior year, which is really, really solid. And once again, we get into an interesting thing there of, like, yes, we do have this logjam of kind of powery forward, cuspy center guys. But I do think for the right fit, you could have a player that can cover up some of Montrezl Harrell's kind of some of his deficiencies on defense. And that also just, like, the biggest problem for me to the Trez and Lou pick and roll is two things, really. A, not having enough spacing on the floor to let them operate at their fullest. We've seen that at times when teams don't respect someone like Garrett Temple. Obviously, with Jamichael Green out there, it opens things up a lot more. So if you could add one more shooter, I feel like that would be really great. But the other issue is always going to be defensively. Lou Will, you know, he wants to play no defense if he had his way. But so if you can get somebody who can kind of pick up a little bit of, I don't want to say slack, because that implies a lack of effort, but I think that if you can find somebody who can cover some of those holes for Montrez, and that would help that second unit to keep establishing a lead or to fight back in a game. Because it's one of those issues where, like, yes, they can be a quick bucket-getting squad, but we can see that lead diminished on the other end really just as quickly. So Jalen McDaniels, like, if he can live up to that 94 defensive rating, yeah, I don't know. Somebody's asking if we could make another run at Rudy Gay, if he's willing to take less for a title run. That's an interesting that's an interesting prospect. I think that he could fit nicely on that second unit. I don't know if he's quite the caliber of guy that's going to get us over the hump on the starting squad. So Jalen McDaniels, couple weaknesses I'm going to get into. His overall defensive game, which makes no sense to me because he had a 94 defensive rating, so maybe the rest of the team was just good. Someone's saying they'd rather go Jay Crowder than Rudy Gay. I'm wholeheartedly with that. Just right now, we'd have to make a trade for him or wait another year. Would they even get decent PT if the Clippers become contenders? I don't know. I think that Jay Crowder could slot into this squad and get really solid minutes at the three on that second unit. He's a great shooter. He's a great defender. He'd be a little bit oversized for that position, but I still like the front court lineup of having, say, a Jay Crowder at the three, Jamichael Green at the four, and then Trez at the five. Just because I feel like you're getting the most value out of Lou Will having Trez on the floor at the same time. So some other McDaniels weaknesses. He doesn't really box out that well. He's a ball watcher. So hopefully, like, he relies a lot on physical. He relies a lot on physical tools. So that's one of those things that doesn't really translate to me to the NBA. I think size can sometimes translate. It's just one of those things, like I said earlier, it's really hard to gauge for me at the college level. Unless you're like a freak large athlete, it's really hard for me to see if that's even going to be like a reliable backup for you at the highest level. So one last guy that we got, and I feel like he's been talked about a lot. I don't think he's going to end up falling to us, but since he's been kind of mocked all over, I'll bring him up on here, and that's the Admiral. Admiral Schofield out of Tennessee. He's a 6'6 small forward. He looks a lot bigger than 6'6, though, when you watch him on the court. He'd be the only true small forward on the roster if we drafted him. The small forward position, I've been talking about this, I mean, forever, but it seems like I've been harping on it more and more recently. It's the paper-thinnest rotation that we currently have. I think that the front office might be making a move towards a smaller lineup, keeping some variation if we end up signing Pat Bev, which we'll talk more about later, of obviously Shea, Pat, and Shamit as a small backcourt, really small forward scenario. Matt Chonger is saying, doesn't care about the stats of Schofield, draft him now. He's the only true small forward. He played 4 years, which is really solid, and it shows. Body development-wise, he's a lot bigger of a dude. He looks more. He looks to have a more NBA-ready body. He was 38% or better from three all 4 years. His shooting splits, though, and this one is concerning to me, is he shot 47% from the field, 41% from three. Those are great numbers. You get to his free throw percentage, and it drops to 69, which, you know, chill as hell if he was doing it on purpose, but I don't know, man. It's shooting under 70% from free throws makes me wonder how well your shot is really going to translate when you're getting, you know, when you're facing getting blocked by much bigger opposition. So that kind of worries me. What else? He's strong. He's a great finisher. His second jump which I feel like is a stat we don't talk about enough, is really, really good. He's there's a bunch of highlights of him, like just snagging down rebounds, getting covered by the defense, and just lofting over all of them. So I think that's a really good that's a really good skill set, especially for a three. Just somebody to get some more rebounds, especially if Patrick Beverley is no longer with this squad, which I don't even want to think about. But if that's going to be the case, somebody like this, if he falls in that second round to where the Clippers could take him, I think would be really strong. He's not the fastest, like, lateral mover. His first step isn't anything to write home about. A lot of times you'll just see him kind of camping up in the corner, but he is really accurate from those shots. So I don't know. I don't think he's really going to fall to Clippers range in the second round. But if he does, this is honestly probably my favorite of the prospects that's been mocked towards us. So we'll just have to see what happens, man. It'd be great to have a true small forward on the roster. And, you know, if hopefully that free throw like shooting is just a fluke and he can continue to improve. He does have a really high release. He's not fast necessarily to get the shot off. But I do think that we could give him some wide open shots in sets on that second unit. So that's about all I got for draft prospects. I gotta be honest with you guys. I gotta know how everybody else out there is feeling. I'm not that pumped for the draft, just from a Clippers perspective. Other all NBA perspective, sure, it's always interesting. But yeah, just as a Clippers fan, I'm like kind of meh. So coming up next, we're going to be taking some more questions from Twitter, but first got to give a quick shout out to Hotels.com. Hotels.com, book the vacation that you want. They're great. Check them out at Hotels.com. They're sponsoring this Twitter Tuesdays. They sponsor our Love, Marry, Kill every single Friday. So if you need a room, maybe while you're on the road, maybe you just need a place to stay because you're sick of being at home. Check them out. That's Hotels.com. Also, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that's great. Also, check out the Himalaya app. It's the future. So, jumping into Twitter Tuesdays, what do we got? So, I'm not sure how to say this Twitter handle, so if I butcher it, I'm sorry. I believe it's Yavi the Hot. I hope that's right. It's a great Twitter handle if I'm saying it right. But Yavi the Hot wants to know, I'd like to know what kind of impact these superstar injuries, Kawhi winning the championship, and AD's early trade to the Lakers will make on the Clippers' free agency decisions. Someone's commenting on the Ralph Lawler bobblehead. Yes, this was a giveaway. They gave them to everybody at Media Row, which was incredible. I thought I was going to have to steal one from a small child or something. Turns out they had us covered. If you weren't at the game, try to find one on eBay. It's easily my favorite giveaway I've ever gotten from a game. But so as far as the impact is concerned with these superstar injuries, I don't really think it affects the Clippers at all in terms of free agency. I do think that it affects us, obviously, in contention for the West. Things have widened up quite a bit. I do think that it's going to affect other teams more than us. I think teams like the Rockets, who we talked about earlier, who are, you know, imploding, it would seem, are going to be a little bit more desperate in free agency. And does that mean that they can lure away a free agent that maybe the Clippers were going to get? I do think that's possible, but I only think that that's would be guys that wouldn't be on our first tier of free agents anyways. So I don't really think the superstar injuries affect anything. I don't think Kawhi winning the championship affects free agency for us at all either. I think the plan has always been kind of Kawhi or guys just to kind of fill out the roster, strong rotation players. So I don't think Kawhi winning the championship affects free agency from the Clippers' perspective or, honestly, Kawhi's perspective. I think that his decision has been pretty much made. Maybe there's a stronger pitch now, especially after that, 2 million people-wide parade in Toronto the other day. If you saw any footage, it was pretty crazy. Things got a little out of hand. Don't have time for that right now, but we might talk about that after the pod is up. So, someone asked, what's my reaction going to be when Kawhi gets signed to the Clippers? I'm probably going to go Kawhi with it, and I'm just going to give it a mellow laugh because Hope is a dangerous drug, as we talk about on this podcast. And I don't want to believe too much. I don't want to hope for too much. I'm just going to roll with the punches and keep on clipping, baby. So, somebody, let's see, Whammy Giveaway asks, if Clippers are unable to get a superstar, do they stick with role player method? Who would be the best gets after Beverly? That ties into a question another person asked. Basically, they wanted to know, if we didn't get a free agent, should we go after someone like Bojan Bogdanovic? I would say yes. I'm especially a big fan of Bojan, just depending on the price that you can get him. I think he's looking at less money, especially just given how things kind of turned out in the playoffs, which wasn't wholly his fault, but he wasn't able to really step up to his regular season stats when he was getting that much eye from the defense. So I think that Bojan is going to get a lesser asking price than, say, someone like Harrison Barnes, who just turned down his player option in Sacramento, which we will talk about later. But yeah, I think that the best gets for kind of rotation guys, Bojan Bogdanovic is high on the list for me. I think somebody, I think that Lopez, if Milwaukee's unable to retain him, would be a great pickup. I think depending on the asking price, Malcolm Brogdon is a great player. He's still a little undersized to play the forward, but I think that that's kind of like a direction the Clippers are rolling with right now, which could change if we don't re-sign Beverly, which I'll also talk about in our final segment today. So, Lawler's Law wanted to know, is Gallo really just a trade chip anyway he stays? I don't think Gallo is a trade chip. I don't see it. He's got a troubled injury past, which I think could be behind him. I hope is behind him. But it's one of those things where it's a high asking price, and I don't think without giving up a piece of the young core, which it seems like we're unwilling to do, that trade really moves the needle in any sort of ways. So I don't see Gallo as a trade chip at all. I do think that he could stay. I think it's similar to like the Kawhi pitch, how health is becoming, I feel like almost as big of a thing for these players as winning chips is. I mean, we saw what happened this year in the finals. And I think that if you're a player, like looking forward to a long career has to be up there. Has to be up there with winning a title, you know, because who wants to win a title if your career can't be as long as it can be? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some people would happily trade that, but I would rather the guys on my team be the kind of guys who play forever and are like, you know, like the most decorated guys that never win a title. But that won't happen for the Clippers. We're winning a title next year, no problem. So Big Nate 3242 says that he's a big fan of a Draymond Gallinari trade. This is really interesting to me. Draymond is one of those players that I'm not going to use the unstatable word because he does have stats, but I feel like there's the intangibles with Draymond. I think the problem is he's been on the same team since he was drafted. They've developed him really well. I do think that he tends to get into some bad habits during the regular season, just taking plays off on defense, obviously coming into training camp not in shape and hoping to like play his way into shape was a big issue. That being said, I think that a guy like Draymond is like the underrated piece that you need to win a championship. Do I think that he's worth trading away Gallo? I don't know. I think that like it's six of one, half dozen of the other. The issue for me with Draymond is he's going to do whatever it takes this year to make an all NBA defensive team. I do think that he's going to be a player commanding a max salary, coming into free agency next year. So I don't know. Someone's saying that Draymond almost cost the Warriors game 7 single-handedly. He gets lost in the moment. Stay away from Dre. That's fair. Yeah, I think that it goes both ways though, because I think that for every big screw up Draymond has, there's generally a big highlight play, and for every big highlight play, I think that there's three just really solid moves that he makes on the court that maybe isn't like the flashiest thing. Although he is a great passer, he's just one of those guys who provides a spark on both ends of the floor. And I think, I don't know, I think like a small ball combo with Patrick Beverley and Draymond Green is like, that's a defensive powerhouse. And, you know, like, does have some ability on the other end as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's an interesting prospect. I don't think it's something that would happen. I don't think it's, like, really what the Warriors are looking for. But, and I don't know. I don't think Draymond long-term would really be good for this Clippers team. I don't think he's the max guy that we can afford to have right now, if that makes sense. Like, I think the max guy that we have kind of has to be the guy. Because, you know, we got to think about the long play. You know, 3 years from now, we're going to have a lot of really good rookies that are going to command big salaries. So getting too tied up right now is just not going to be feasible. So coming up next, I'm going to get into this Is Patrick Beverley Gone segment, as well as I've got a little segment for you called Who Says No, where we talk about a couple of free agents, and I'm guessing everybody's going to say no. But first, check out Untucked Shirts. If you want to wear your shirt untucked, as I often do, sometimes it can look goofy. Sometimes it can look ill-fitting. However, Untucked Shirts got you covered. If you want to be a cash guy and still look good, check them out. Untucked Shirts. Let's get into segment three. Is Patrick Beverley gone? Sources say that Patrick Beverley has been a free agent target of the Bulls and the Lakers. No surprises there. But it seems as though he's going to be taking meetings with as many as five different teams before his meeting with the Clippers in 2 weeks. So Clippers are going to be kind of big game hunting, like we've been talking about, chasing max-type free agents. And this is the thing that I've been waiting, that I've been worried about since the playoffs, is I don't think we can expect Patrick Beverley to wait around. You know, it was said, he talked to TMZ earlier today and basically said, who's going to pay me? And I think that that's totally valid at this stage of his career. You know, he's been playing on low deals. He obviously had a terrible injury last season. And you know, I think that he proved himself. And he's the kind of guy who's like a really passionate player. And I think that he will give his all to any team that he's on. But I do think that he expects the same respect to be returned. So I guess I kind of see this taking all these free agent meetings as a double-edged sword. On one hand, teams get to give him a really good pitch. Obviously, he's a Chicago guy. Being able to go home could be huge for him. I actually don't think the Lakers' pitch is that strong, but you know that. I mean, obviously, a little bit of that is bias. I just don't see it being a situation that he would maybe particularly enjoy that much. I think that he likes being a leader. I think that he likes playing with younger guys and kind of like coaching them. And you know, that's based on nothing but just seeing him in the locker room, seeing how he interacts with guys. So I don't see the Lakers, you know, being that alluring of a free agent. Somebody's saying 3 years for $40 million for Patrick Bev. Whew. Man, if that's the price of doing business, I guess that's fine. I guess I was thinking more in the 10 mil range, maybe 4 for $40. If he wants a longer contract, he is getting up there in age. I don't know. I think that he's going to be looking at probably the 10 to $12 million range. Maybe somebody could go for an overpay, but like the Lakers can't offer him anything more than that. So I don't see that as working out. The Bulls can. I think they'd have to make some room, but they could possibly make that happen. But the plus side of him taking all these teams' pitch meetings before he meets with the Clippers is that we get a little bit more time to kind of suss out free agency. And I think that he did this intentionally, knowing that if he looked to get paid from the Clippers right away, he probably wouldn't like the answer. So I do almost see this as a courtesy on Patrick Beverley's part to go ahead and take our meeting last. This happens in free agency and other places. I guess most recently I'm thinking of the Gordon Hayward trade where he met with the Jazz last, and he did not end up staying there. So while I am worrisome that there's so much interest, I think it makes sense. Patrick Beverley proved himself to be an all-defensive player in this league. I think that he deserves a payday, and I really hope that we're able to give it to him. The thing is we keep talking about this kind of hybrid lineup with a lot of like guards and undersized backcourt and small forward position. We cannot play that way without Patrick Beverley. We don't currently have another guard on the roster who can reliably guard small forwards. Shea has the size to do it. Jerome is pretty stout, so maybe he could step up, but neither of those guys are going to be ready to take on the type of defensive assignments that Patrick Beverley can. Neither of those guys could hang with KD or LeBron. So, I don't know. I think that he's worth it. I would be willing to go, as high as 12 mil a year. I guess if it really took it to get it done, 15, but that, you know, that does, there's no two ways around it. 15 mil a year really starts to get tricky in terms of contracts with Patrick Beverley, especially on a long-term deal when we have to think about paying these younger guys. I'd almost be more comfortable with 15 mil a year if it was like a 2 years for 30 kind of situation, where we are giving him a slight overpay. It is a shorter contract, but he's guaranteed the money. And, you know, if he exceeds that contract, then he can sign another one. He'll still be young enough to get a decent contract. Not as much as he's probably able to command this year in free agency. So, then there's just this last thing to wrap up real quick. We got a couple guys on the board. Want to get a feel out there from Clipper Nation. Who says no? So first up, we got Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Who says no? He's another small forward. He is a pretty solid defensive player. He is not a shooter. So I'm going to go ahead and just kick this one off by saying I say no. RHJ, he's a solid role player. He's just not, he doesn't fit with what we're trying to do on our second unit right now. And I don't know exactly what kind of contract he's going to command. Someone's saying I liked him in Arizona, but no, I got to agree. He's a no for me. But once again, if we lose Patrick Beverley, he suddenly becomes a little bit more alluring just depending on the type of contract that you can get him at. When you need him in there for those defensive kind of plays, he is still a pretty solid scorer. I just think that positionally, the way he plays, he doesn't create a whole lot of space. So I don't see that as being particularly advantageous for the second unit. However, if they did run him some limited minutes with the starters, we could say, all right, so somebody, I'll add this into who says no. Somebody's saying, what about D'Angelo Russell? I got to kick this one also off with a no. I like D'Angelo Russell's game. I think that he's grown a lot. I just don't see any point in... I don't know. I just don't see any point in bringing on another point guard. Shea is most valuable to this team when... I don't know. Shea is most valuable to this team when he has the ball in his hands. And... you know, for as good as D'Angelo Russell is, defensively, he's worse than Shea. He's a net negative on that end. And he still makes a lot of kind of careless plays. I think that playing with the Lakers for that period of time, even though he wasn't really given the full keys, you develop some bad habits. He takes a lot of early in the clock pull-up transition jumpers. And there's just a lot of aspects to his game that, like, even though he is a really good player, a great passer, and, you know, he's becoming even better, he's got a game that is really kind of similar to Shea's to me in some ways. He's not, like, the most athletic guy, but he does the Shea thing where he kind of uses tempo. He uses just kind of tempo and stops to kind of lull a defense. And I do think that that's a really interesting quality because it's something that's not going to diminish as a player ages as much as, say, you know, a Westbrookian type athleticism. But just for the defensive liabilities, as well as I want the ball in Shea's hands as often as possible, I'm going to say no on that one. And then my final who says no, this one's hot off the presses. Harrison Barnes just turned down his player option for $25 million in Sacramento. I'm guessing that they're going to try and re-sign him, especially given especially considering the trade. However, I think this one for me is a maybe. It depends on the contract. At 24, 25 mil a year, I don't think so. To me, that's like, to me, Harrison Barnes is right now in this stage of his career, maybe a little lower ceiling Tobias Harris. His defensive rating has slipped pretty much every season since he left the Warriors. He can be a streaky shooter. He can be an extremely inefficient player. However, he is a true small forward, which, if you've been looking at the roster, is a hole we need filled. So I'm a firm maybe. I think if you could get Harrison Barnes in that 18 mil a year range, then it's maybe worth it. Someone saying they used to believe he was a big part of the Warriors, but proved that he wasn't that integral in Dallas. I don't know. I think that's like a double-edged sword in that, you know, like Dallas could have used him inefficiently. We all know that Carlisle has guys that he likes and guys that he doesn't. And if you're on his naughty list or whatever you want to call it, playing time and getting sets run for you is a lot more rare. But I do agree. He didn't look as spectacular. And I don't think that he's your number one guy, which is why you can't pay him number one guy money. I think for a deal in the 15 to 18 at the very highest range for someone like Harrison Barnes, I think that that's a decent deal. So I'm a firm maybe on that. We got a lot of no's on the Twitter stream. I'm a firm maybe. However, that's going to do it for Who Says No. Hopefully I'll bring this segment back. But that's all I got for you today. That's going to wrap it up for the podcast. I am William, the Opinion Updike. That's at Will Updike on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Listen on the Himalaya app if you haven't yet. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe. Give us a rating. It really does a lot. So thanks so much for listening to another episode of Locked On Clips.